And would Emmeline and Katie and Josh come forward, please? So we're going to do a midrash, a retelling, a reinterpretation of the story of the Garden of Eden that I call the Awakening. And so thank you to Emmeline and Katie and Josh for helping us out. And we'll also have some assistance from PF, who've been sitting very nicely in the front row today. So here we go. Ish was naive. Ish had grown up in a great family with lots of love and tenderness. It was like Ish had been raised in paradise, the way people imagine a sort of beaver cleaver 1950s American paradise. The Garden of Eden American style. But Ish was lonely.
I'm lonely.
So Ish prayed to God.
I'm lonely.
And God said to Ish,
Ish, why not travel a bit? See the world. I mean, this great big beautiful garden that I've made for you is just wonderful, but why don't you go out a bit? Fall in love and then come back to Wisconsin with a partner. I'll tell you, there's nothing better. You'll be surprised how wonderful it is to have a partner. I have two. You know, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, or Creator, Redeemer, Sanctifier, or Mother, Lover, Friend. Yeah, words fall short, but you know what I mean. I'm all about relationships.
So, Ish traveled in the Garden of Eden that was Wisconsin, searching for a partner. Ish first met a potential mate who looked a little different.
I'm lonely.
We're working on it.
Ish, you've got to do better than that. You really need to work on your lines. I mean, I understand the direct approach and all, but partners generally want someone who can be a little bit more of a conversationalist, or at least has the capacity for sentences of more than two words.
Well, I'm still lonely.
I know. Well, here's an interesting creature. What do you think of that for a partner?
Can I talk with her?
That's the idea.
What do I call her?
Whatever you want.
I'll call her Camel.
You mean Camilla?
No, I mean Camel.
So this went on for a while, God and Ish trying to decide what to call this interesting-looking creature that was before them. God already knew that this was a camel. God also knew that this creature was a lot better for desert transportation and labor than as a life partner. But people need to learn from their mistakes. And besides, God wanted Ish to work on words. God knew that words would really matter in Ish's life and in the life of Ish's partner. Words would even incarnate the spirit, so to speak, in the one people would call Jesus. But that was a long time off.
I'm still
lonely. And the camel can go back to its shed. Go ahead. Thank you to the camel.
I'm still lonely.
Okay, so you've named this interesting creature Camel. Let's keep traveling a bit and see what else this great garden has to offer.
So Ish and God walked in the garden on a trail beside a lake with birch and pine and oak. It was fall, so the autumn leaves of red and gold drifted by them as they walked. And all of a sudden, there was a shadow cast on them that made Ish look upward.
What's that?
Well, what are you going to call it?
Could one of those be a partner for me? Wow, they really fly. I'd love to fly like that.
Well, you're not quite made that way. You're more of an earthling. That's what I think I'll call you. Adam, from the Hebrew, Adamah, earth. You're dust.
and to dust you shall return.
Hmm.
Adam.
So God and Ish, who eventually became known as Adam, walked along in silence for a while, pondering what it meant to be an earthling. And then there was that shadow again. Flying above them. Exactly. And it came to Adam what that creature could be called.
That's an eagle. It's a majestic bird. For some reason, I see a bright future for it on coins. But I'm still lonely.
I know you're lonely. We know.
And just then, a furry little creature hopped across their path as they continued to walk.
What's that?
You really aren't catching on to this naming thing very quickly, are you?
Oh, yeah. I can call it anything I want, right?
That's the idea.
So that's a hare.
A hare?
Yes, a hare.
Okay, so just to tally it up, so far you've named one camel, one eagle, and one hare. Any partners?
No, I can't hop like that.
Okay, tell you what. Why don't we have you just sleep on this for a minute? There's nothing better like a good mid-afternoon nap.
So Ish laid down and went into a deep sleep and dreamt a vivid dream. Ish was still in the garden, but all of a sudden it became apparent. A partner was one who would be like a part of the same body. They'd be cut from the same cloth, woven on the same loom, one rib from one side, one rib from the other. So when Ish woke up, there was a partner also waking up in the soft afternoon light.
Good afternoon, sweethearts.
This truly is flesh of my flesh, bone of my bone, heart of my heart. This one shall be called Isha, for this one is out of Ish.
Apologies for the Hebrew, but the poetry in Hebrew is important and non-binary in a way that's really vital to get clear about these days when our own gendered language is so loaded with either-or moralizing that really doesn't fit God's own loving and infinite creativity.
I am so glad that you found a partner, Adam. Now, I'm going to leave you two alone for a little while, while I go out and do a little bit more creating, since this is the version of the scriptures in which I have to create the entire world in one day.
So God wandered off to do a little galaxy creating, and the serpent, who was more crafty than any other creature in the garden, said to Isha,
"Did God say you shall not eat from any tree in the garden?"
We'll overlook for now that this is a talking snake. And you can interpret that symbol pretty much any way you want to, sexually, politically, personally, and you probably won't be too far off.
Why do you twist God's words around? We may eat the fruit of the trees in the garden, but God said, "You shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that's in the middle of the garden, nor shall you touch it, or you shall die."
This was not exactly what God had said to Ish either. Something got lost in translation, apparently, which is what happens when we get tempted. We get dizzy with possibility, or we get frightened, and we lose our orient. We distort the past, and we don't communicate in the present. We don't ask the right questions. We lose sight of the reality right in front of us. We get tangled up in our words, and we lose touch with our source. And then that talking snake said,
"You will not die, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be open, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil."
This was an absurdity. There wasn't any logic in it. You won't die because your eyes will be open, but you will be like God, knowing good and evil, because you eat an apple from an arbitrarily designated tree? Really, if you're paying attention in the context of the story, that doesn't make much sense. And yet, a lot of times, stupidity and nonsense prevail in history. Alas. And so too in this story. And where was Adam when Isha, who wasn't called Eve yet, needed him most, you might ask? When the chips were down and when a partner was most needed, Isha was alone. She didn't have a friend in the world, or so she felt. And then when Adam does show up, it's to blame the victim, as if we haven't been triggered by that plot line enough lately. But there is truth in this story of giving in to a compromise and losing one's orient. It's a story we live out every day in infinite ways.
We toil for our daily bread with the sweat of our brow. But that's not really much different than what we see other animals doing, working for their survival. We know that we have to work. We know what to call it. We're not innocently naked anymore. We have some distance from our labor, a capacity to recognize both its inherent dignity and goodness, and its potential debasement and demeaning character.
And we experience pain in childbirth, which also isn't much different than what we see other animals doing. Giving birth is hard work, or so I've heard. But again, the problem isn't so much the pain, it's that we are aware of the pain. We are not innocently naked of our pain and pleasure. We know the difference, and we have words that we will use to describe these phenomena. Be careful how you describe the world. It might become like that.
So I tripped you up, did I?
Wait a minute. Did you fall?
No, I didn't fall. Did you?
No. This isn't a story of our fall. It is our awakening, which is how our Jewish sisters and brothers understand this story.
They haven't been indoctrinated into Plato's dualism of soul over body. And
Augustine's
questionable idea of original sin would come much, much later.
Instead of a fall, we have been awakened to the way our words, this essential human gift, can both generate and destroy relationships. We awaken to ourselves and that the awareness gives us agency and freedom and autonomy, but it can also make us self-conscious and even self-centered.
It is through words that we know the difference between good and evil, which means we can get stuck and our words alienate when they are intended to unite.
In the same way, we awaken to the knowledge that we are mortal. We know that we will die. We know that we are like the animals, and yet we have words to name our feelings, our experiences, our reality. And those words can bring both comfort and denial.
Our words can clarify, or they can hide, the difference between good and evil, the difference between that which is life-giving and that which is death-dealing, and the difference between being honest and hiding truth.
Let's face it. We usually do know the difference between good and evil when we see it, and it's usually much clearer than some apple in an orchard and an arbitrary prohibition, when our words don't get in the way.
One more time. Our words can get in the way between us and God. Our words can alienate, while they also, thankfully, can uplift with beauty, goodness, and truth.
Because words are power, they can make the difference between good and evil, can be twisted into lies. Good can be perverted into reasons to hate, to murder, to go to war. Words are a great gift and a great curse.
So tell the truth, tell the truth, tell the truth. That was all three of us, God in one. Father, Son, Holy Spirit, Mother, Friend, Lover, Creator, Redeemer, Sanctifier. All of us telling you, tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
And then God did what God always does. God clothed Ish and Isha, Adam and Eve, to comfort them, as God clothes and comforts us.
And what clothes they are! I picked out a wardrobe just for you. Compassion and kindness and humility, quiet strength. I will clothe you with an even temper, and you can wear the ability to forgive an offense like a scarf around your neck. You are going to need it, especially if you use words. Keep forgiveness as close at hand to you as a scarf around your neck, and you will be able to forgive others just as quickly as I forgive you. And regardless of what else you put on, wear love. It's your basic all-purpose garment, even better than a little black dress. Never be without it.
So the story of the Garden of Eden, the story of the awakening, isn't over. It's barely begun. It goes on in our lives, in the choices we make, the temptations we face, and in how we communicate. It goes on in the ways we describe our situations, the compromises we live with, the distortions we allow. It goes on in our struggles for truth and justice, for those voiceless to be heard, and to hold those in power to account to truth. And it goes on, above all, in God's loving presence, clothing us in splendid robes of green and gold. Yes. But it's true. God's loving presence endures whatever temptations we give into. God's loving presence can handle any talking snake. And let me guess, for the last few minutes at least, you weren't lonely. Am I right? The theological point of this ancient story is simply this. God was there from the beginning. God is here right now. And God will be with us wherever we go. Please thank our theater members.